Hi, everyone. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
And it's May, which means it's my birthday month, which means that I get to watch movies I like.
Yes.
In this episode, we're covering off Ghost Ships in Event Horizon from 1997 and Sunshine from 2007.
Yes.
Ironically, both these movies set 10 years apart, and they came out 10 years apart.
Yeah, yeah.
47 and 57.
They're both set 50 years in the future from when they were made.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 2047 and 2057.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are fun movies.
As always, spoilers ahead. Massive spoilers. Yeah,
there will definitely be spoilers.
And this is definitely not going to be a child-friendly episode.
Yes, this is not a child-friendly episode. These are not child-friendly movies. Please do not let your child watch either of these movies. They will be traumatized. And yeah, as we are discussing, we will be discussing topics that are not child friendly.
Yeah.
Mainly in the realm of gore, I imagine.
not L.
Not hell, is that what you said?
L.
L.
L. Gore? No, okay. Swing and a miss. Okay. I've watched these movies many times. I think the last time we watched Event Horizon, it was for our friend's movie group.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd only seen Sunshine once before with me.
Yeah, yeah, we've watched Sunshine together, and I don't think I'd ever seen it before then.
Right, yeah.
It's a movie that I was aware of, like it was in my sphere, but I'd just never gotten around to watching it.
Have you seen Sphere?
No, I haven't seen Sphere.
Okay.
I've seen Europa Report.
Yeah, Europa Report.
I've also seen another movie about going to the sun. I think it's just called Soul. Anyway, irrelevant. These movies are similar, which is great because they're both good movies. And unfortunately, I looked up the budget and box office of these like right before we started recording and discovered that they were both flops, which makes me feel very sad because they're incredible films. I love both of them.
It's the cast alone is nuts.
Yeah, like, yeah. Crazy cast in both.
Yeah. Lawrence Fishburne, obviously. Sam Neill, our boy Sam Neill. Jason Isaacs is in there. It's
great. Jolie Richardson.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, Sunshine's got friggin' half of the MCU in it.
Yeah, you got Michelle Yeoh, you got Benedict Wong.
Yeah.
You got
Chris Evans.
Chris Evans.
My boy Cliff Curtis.
Yeah.
If you ever need a somewhat not looking white person of color.
He got to actually play a Maori guy in this, which is nice.
Normally he doesn't.
Well, they wrote the character as like a stuck up British character, and he was like, can I play him? Or can he just be Kiwi? And they were like, yeah, no problem. Which I think is kind of also what they did with Sam Neill in Event Horizon.
Yeah, because his accent is all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. I think he just used his normal voice. Because I think they wrote it as a British character, but then cast Sam Neill, and they were like, yeah, no problem, which is why he has the Australian flag.
Yeah, it's like a weird Australasian.
It is Australian, but Sam Neill specifically. So they did, for like the British characters in it, they gave them a European Union flag with like extra stars on it to be like, all of Europe has joined. Yeah, yeah. They didn't foresee Brexit.
No.
Yeah, but they thought that like in the future, I guess, you know, the European Union would be similar to the United States, that there would be one flag and that would be the flag that any of their astronauts would use. So Sam Neill was like, hey, since you're giving me an Australian flag, even though he is Kiwi, but he lived in Australia, we'll leave him. He was like, can you update it, take the Union Jack off it and put the Aboriginal flag on there?
Yeah.
Put a First Nations flag on that, because that's what I expect the flag will look like by 2047. So good on him. I mean, in the 90s for him to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
A detail that many people would not notice.
Yeah, no. Cliff Curtis, he plays like the ship's psychologist who's like helping them through this journey. And there was a criticism that was thrown out by a friend of mine after watching Gravity, is there's no way Sandra Bullock would be able to fly. And I would also point that it was Sam Neill's character, despite the fact that, spoilers obviously, like I said earlier, you know, Sam Neill's built this gravity drive thing in the event horizon. With the loss of his wife and the constant nightmares he's having, the fact that he, like, it looks like he lives in the same place, which is not an apartment, it's in a space station, and is also still shaving with a straight razor, where, obviously, trigger warning, she commits suicide in the bathtub with a straight razor, and you're like, why would you still have these things? Like, he is not in the right state of mind. And they're like, oh yeah, cool, go to the farthest place of the, like, our solar system.
Yeah, I think it's just because the mission itself is so top secret. And, like, the original Event Horizon mission was so top secret that, like, and he was the engineer who built the device that they needed him to go because he was the only person, because, they needed the rest of the crew to get them there, but the rest of the crew didn't need to know what was going on. Until they got there, and so they needed Sam Neill for that. I mean, definitely a bad judgment call.
But we
also don't know if the nightmares have been happening the whole time or if it's only since the Event Horizon came back as well. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Because spoiler alert, the Event Horizon, the ship, disappeared for a significant period of time. I can't remember how many years. Is it 7 years?
Yeah.
7 years is how long the Icarus 2 has been missing.
Correct.
Or the Icarus 1, I mean. The Icarus 1.
Yeah.
In Sunshine, so I wasn't sure if I had just merged the two in my mind, but were they both gone for 7 years?
I'm pretty sure.
That's fun. Yeah, so the ship disappeared, and then they suddenly got the beacon from it. So, that's why he's going out. Also, he probably just hit it.
Yeah, they're both 7 years.
Both 7 years, yeah. That's crazy.
10 years apart, 7 years apart.
And also, both, you know, missions involve a person who was the engineer who created the device that was significant to do the main mission, which the first ship failed to do, and the second ship comes along.
Well, in the Event Horizon, it didn't fail.
That's true.
It just didn't go to the place they thought it was going to go to.
Yeah. I mean, that's also kind of the case for the Icarus 1, spoiler alert, because it's not that it actually failed, it's that the crew went mad and stopped it from they stopped the ship short of where it was going because they believed in a god that was the sun or whatever.
Very much Ra, like, worshipping the sun.
But Cillian Murphy's character Kappa is, you know, heavily implied to be the person who designed the payloads.
Well, he's definitely the guy who, like, built the bomb.
Yeah.
Which is ironic, because then he went and played Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
Years later. I will let you go, like, bring anything up, because I'm going to go on some massive tangents for a while about both movies.
Okay. I thought it was
going to
be about Warhammer 40K.
It is going to be about Warhammer 40K, but if there's anything else you want to discuss before I jump into the...
anything I want to discuss that's not Warhammer.
Yeah.
Lots of things.
Okay.
Do we want to, like, because we want to compare these movies,
right? Yeah, of course. That's the whole premise of the podcast.
Yeah, I think the main difference is that, you know, no one knew that they were going to find the Icarus 1 in Sunshine. So in Sunshine, they're going out to complete the mission that the Icarus 1 failed at.
Yeah.
Ironically calling themselves the Icarus 2, which is not a good omen. Don't call your ship Icarus if it's flying to the sun, because Icarus's whole story is that he flew too close to the sun and died.
I think it's supposed to be irony.
Yeah, but, like, the fact that it happened to one ship and then they're like, well, let's just call the other one Icarus as well.
There's a really beautiful sequence when the ship part of the ship detaches from the payload.
Yeah.
And you only see it for a brief moment when the bomb detaches. There's, like, a really intricate design of wings on the inside of the shield that they're going to use to go back with.
Yeah.
And it obviously gets destroyed, but it's, like, a really beautiful moment of, like, oh, wow, like, this, like, they went into the effort of, like, you know, let's put this on there.
Yeah, they're Icarus's wings, and then they burn.
Yeah.
They get too close to the sun and they burn.
Yeah. Well, his was made out of wax.
Yes, true. His melted rather than burned.
Yeah.
It is... Yeah, it definitely, they're definitely, like, you know, from a filmmaking point of view, intentionally using the metaphor. But I feel like in real life, like, why would you do that? It's also in the Event Horizon. So in Event Horizon, they're just told they have to go on this mission, they have to get out to Neptune, and they're not told what it is until they actually arrive. And then Sam Neill is like, well, the Event Horizon has reappeared and we're going to go salvage it. So it is a rescue mission. Mm. Though he does care more about the gravity engine than he does about actually rescuing the crew. But in terms of unlucky things, they dock at one of the airlocks, and it's airlock 13.
Mm.
And then things just go downhill from there. But also, like, that you were talking about the nightmares that he's having, and we do see other characters in Event Horizon having nightmares and being haunted by their pasts. But in Sunshine, they're all having the same dream as each other of falling onto the surface of the sun. So in both cases, something is manipulating the minds of the crew.
Yeah, it's very stressful. It would be a very stressful situation. There's not a lot of people. Like, you know, that's why astronauts tend to be, like, the top percentage in, like, their field and stuff.
Yeah.
And then even, like, saying that, you're not automatically going to get selected. Like, the willpower and mental fortitude that someone needs to go to, like, not wake up one day and be just like, I don't want to be here anymore, and, like, try and open the friggin' door. Like,
yeah. And also, people
do it on planes.
Yeah.
Like, people freak out on planes, and, like, to most people, plane travel is nothing.
Yeah.
They
did get the, for Sunshine, they got the cast to spend time living together on a submarine.
Yeah.
To really feel, like, what it would be like to be in that isolation with this group of people and be in this kind of confined space.
Because I think someone was running an experiment, I don't remember which country it was, or it might have been Europe.
Europe's not a country.
Sorry.
Except it is in the Event Horizon universe, I guess.
That's what I meant.
In 2047, Europe will be a country.
Yeah. Some agency, space agency, was running a experiment, which was either a Mars habitat program or a long distance flight program. But basically, how it went was they had a physical mock up of what their living space would be. And then as further they got away, and longer they'd been away, the communication got longer. There was, like, a lag between the communication. So when every problems came up, they had to, like, figure it out themselves and also be like, oh, by the way, this is happening. And then, like, 9 hours later, they'd be like, oh, cool. You know, keep us updated on how, are you guys still there? Like, hello. Yeah. And I think that was, like, the people, like, because you couldn't scrub out of that. Like, there was, like, multiple testing that you had to go through for that.
Yeah.
Because, like, basically, like, the equivalent of, like, I give up, I'm walking out, it's not like Survivor.
Yeah.
And you just, like, leave the island. Didn't they do a really weird, screwy game show?
Probably.
Where they tricked everyone to thinking they were in space, and then they, like, opened up the window, and they were on, like, in front of a live audience after they'd, like, simulated a launch. That's horrible. No,
I've never heard of that, but that's awful.
Yeah.
That's horrendous.
Because I'm pretty sure there was a premise of either a movie or of a television show I saw that like that, where people thought they were on a spaceship, and then, like, a person got ejected, and then they just fall and land in a net, and they're, like, they get airlocked by the crew.
Right.
And then they fall into a net, and they're like, what the hell? And they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, that you've been lied to this entire time, and this is all fake.
But they ejected someone out of the airlock?
It was like an experiment. Like, just, like, how would people survive if, you know, they were in a spaceship and, like, didn't know they were still on Earth?
Yeah. But you're saying that, like, the contestants went nuts and tried to...
They weren't contestants. They were, like, lab experiment people.
Yeah, but they, like...
airlocked somebody. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the movies. The willpower alone is nuts. It's one of those things you sort of do and test for.
It's funny because I feel like Cliff Curtis's character Searle in Sunshine, like, you're introduced to him at the beginning and he seems like he's nuts.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, there's going to be some play into this with the fact that the psychiatrist on board is actually losing his mind himself. But then, like, when it's crunch time, he's actually just so calm and collected, and also, like, making really practical decisions And you're just like, oh, okay, actually, he's kind of, you know, and I mean, then he does kind of sacrifice himself to the sun because he's like, why not at this point?
Yeah.
Because he's stuck himself alone on a base full of dead people, or a ship full of dead people in the Icarus One.
Yeah.
But, you know, to save his crew, not just for funsies. But even, like, you know, in those moments, he's just very practical about it. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And I feel like that's kind of across the board as well, because you also feel like Chris Evans' character... What's his name? I've forgotten his name. I was going to say Cooper, but that's someone from Event Horizon.
No, that's the engineer from Event Horizon. Mace,
yeah. Yeah, because like him and Kappa are always fighting, and then there's this moment where, you know... only one of them can use a suit, and he's like, well, Kappa has to use the suit because Kappa is more critical to the mission than I am because he has to deliver the payload.
Yeah.
You know, and then he does come up with, like, an engineering solution to try and to try to save more than one of them.
Mm.
But he's very, like, despite their disagreements and things, he's very practical in saying, actually, you know, as much as I don't like this guy and he doesn't like me, he's the one who needs to survive if only one of us is going to survive, because he's the one who needs to go do this thing.
Yeah.
So I like that they do, you know, because you would say, you know, otherwise you would say, like, why is this guy who loves fighting allowed on the ship? But, like, actually, when it comes down to pressure moments, he works really well under pressure and just gets the job done. And is able to respect that, unlike their comms guy.
Yeah, Harvey is not... It's interesting because, like, there's some dialogue from Mace in the beginning, in the beginning of the movie when he's like, angry at Kappa.
Yeah.
About spending too long trying to record a message to send home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, 16 months, you can get used to anything, and, you know, I've been slacking, and it's not going to happen again, and it's really shows, like, people are really in their own little zone.
Yeah.
Especially with Michelle Yeoh's character, who's, like, completely focused on their botany at
Corazon, I think.
Yeah. Corazon. There's an R in there.
Corazon, yeah.
Yeah. She's very much focused on, like, her gardening and, yeah, like, being, like, in the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand, because, like, if you can't go outside and you're in a ship with people that maybe you would eventually develop being, like, some form of friendship, or at least, you know, mutual respect for, 16 months being stuck with only a group of people living, like, the same routine of, like, do this, do that, with, like, basically no weekends.
Yeah.
You would start, like, hyper-focusing on, like, weird tasks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And Harvey's, like, space music thing, which they're all giving him crap for. You know, Cyril's, like, Cyril. He's like, you know, enjoying sunbathing to the point where he's, like, so sunburned by the time of his death. It's a very, like... very heavily, like, sort of, like, this is the B team, because the A team's already dead, kind of material.
But also that they've done the thing where they've sent the guy who built it out with them this time, because they're like, okay, you know, maybe we need to have the actual guy there when they get there, so that he can, you know, maybe something went wrong with the payload when they got there, and that's why it didn't happen. Harvey is interesting because Captain Canada, who's their original captain, is really level-headed and a really good captain. And then for some reason, Harvey is the second in command, but as soon as he takes over, he's just garbage to everyone. But I think it's also because things are going wrong and he's panicking. But he, do you know why his name is Harvey?
Why?
He's named after Harvey Weinstein. Because he was rude and snappy and doesn't let people do the thing that they need to do. Because Danny Boyle had not so great experiences with Harvey Weinstein. Surprise, surprise.
Fun.
Yeah. Do you want to get into your 40K stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
So, it is well established, this is not my thoughts alone, that In the events of Event Horizon, for those who haven't seen it and just finding it about it now, I highly recommend watching it even after this episode.
Incredible film. Absolute flop in the box office.
Yes. In the fictional universe of Warhammer 40K, or 40,000, the way that humanity has learned to travel faster than light is they travel through the warp, which is a dimension completely filled with emotion. People with latent psychic abilities harvest energy from the warp into the material world. And that's kind of my feeling about Weir a little bit, that he may be like very, very, very minorly psychic. Mm. And that's why he's getting, like, he's so affected.
Yeah. Which is why I think that, like, his nightmares probably began when the Event Horizon came back into our universe. Yeah, because it's sort
of
like
a piece of him has appeared back in the universe.
Yeah, so he is, you know, quite distant from it. Because I think he's overlooking Earth on that space station originally, and it appears in the clouds of Neptune.
Yeah.
And, you know, the others do start to see things when they are close to it or on the ship physically. But he is seeing things. Yeah, he's seeing things from Earth, and while he's in the pod on the way to it.
The other part of, on the same subject, the other part of the canon to me, the head canon to me, in regards to his partner who committed suicide.
Yeah.
I reckon it because he wasn't there. Because that's the whole thing. He's like screaming at, like, to stop, and like he's sorry and stuff. And I think he was so hyper-focused on completing the Event Horizon's drive that he neglected his wife to the point where she committed suicide.
Yep.
And I think that's where the catalyst is. It's like, oh, that thing you spent your entire, like, passion, everything on has reappeared in our physical plane. Like, let's remind you, just a little sprinkle of why you, like, what was the consequences of you building this device?
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
That I'm only just considering now, but you probably have already considered this.
Many considerations.
If we think that you know, the invention of the gravity drive on the Event Horizon is, you know, that's what causes our universe to link to this warp or whatever you said it is.
Yeah.
Do you think that Weir was being possessed when he was designing it, that something wanted him to create it?
So there's a possibility, because he does very much become like a herald for whatever's on the other side of the door.
Yeah.
To the point where it, like, revives him after he's killed.
Yeah, yeah. It like, clones him or something. Yeah. Like, brings him back.
He's definitely, like, a harbinger of something. There is a possibility that, like, you know, hypothetically, if he's a latent psychic...
Yeah, I was going to say, you were talking about latent psychic abilities.
These forces are working through him. Because, like, the technology is fantastic. It looks like a, R.C. Geiger? I can never remember the first two things of the guy who invented, designed Aliens... The Xenomorphs.
Oh, right.
And, like, the lead singer from Korn's mic stand. He's very famous for his, like, very...
For some reason, I thought you were reaching for M.C. Escher, who did, like, the weird stairs that don't connect to each other. You know, like, that Labyrinth is based on.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, a totally different person.
Like, the design of everything in the engineering looks... unhuman.
Mm.
It is very industrialized, but in, like, the most chaos worshipping, like, chaos cultist looking way.
Mm.
Like, nothing is...
While we're on that subject, just because I'll probably forget it later on, when I made a joke when we were watching it.
H.R. Geiger.
I made a joke when we were watching Event Horizon this time, when Justin goes through the tunnel with all the, like, grinder or whatever around the edge of it, and then he gets to the gate, And then, like, and then the gate turns on.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, the Omega 13, and you know, it'll send him back in time 13 seconds to fix one mistake. What I didn't realize saying that was that when the film came out first, one of the people who went to the premiere of it, was, I think, one of the writers of Galaxy Quest. Robert Gordon, one of the screenwriters of Galaxy Quest, and he loved that meat grinder tunnel, and that was why he designed the area they go through, where there's just like all the like crushing machines and stuff to get to it, because he just thought it was so funny. I guess you have to be a comedy writer to watch Event Horizon and go, this is funny. But yeah, so the corridor filled with chompers was based on this corridor that was kind of referred to informally as the meat grinder, which did lead to the section where I made the joke about them getting to the Omega 13. So I thought very funny that, you know, it reminded me of that, but it also is why the writer created that.
That's funny. Back to the 40K. In 40K, when you travel through the warp, because that is the only way to travel other than one race who has faster than light travel, which is a lot slower, you're basically doing what we was explaining in that very, very now overused, but like rememberable trick of like, you know, if you want to travel from one place to another in space, what's the quickest distance? And it's like, oh, it's a straight line. No, if you fold space-time, you can travel right through.
Yeah, and push the pencil through it.
Yeah.
Which appears in so many things. I was trying to figure out, was Event Horizon the first? But Event Horizon and Contact both use that, and they were released 30 days apart. So they obviously didn't copy each other. So they're obviously both referencing something else. But I don't know one. But it's also, you know, quite famously used in Interstellar, which I think probably is a nod to Contact rather than Event Horizon. But you know,
the so basically, there's a technology called a Galafield, and what a Galafield does is it protects all your little squishy mortals inside your spaceship by creating a basically a repelling bubble on the outside of your spaceship. If you don't do that and you go through your Galafield fails while you're in warp travel, you probably don't want to dock with whatever the contents is left with on the other side of the ship, because usually it's either a bunch of like chaos demons who infest the ship, or they just possess the people and turn them into abominations and they kill each other.
Yeah, which is pretty much the plot of Event Horizon.
Pretty much, yeah.
That lovely shot of someone pulling his own intestines out of his mouth.
Yeah, and the whole, like, ripping your own eyes out and being like, where we're going, you don't need eyes. Come on, Marty, get in the DeLorean.
Where we're going, you don't need eyes to see.
Yeah, that's pretty much like, it feels very much like a prequel to 40K.
Did they speak Latin, 40K?
They speak High Gothic.
Oh, okay.
Which is...
Because they do just suddenly, like, well, the captain of the original does just suddenly start speaking Latin.
Yeah, High Gothic is pretty much, like, not the language that is spoken by the Imperium, which I assume being based, like, a lot of it is, like, Latin-y. You know, everything seems to be based on other stuff. It's very much like a let's absorb everything and become one with everything. It gets confusing of who did what first very early, you know, very, very easily. It becomes difficult to find science fiction that doesn't have influence from other things, including like Star Trek and Dune and, you know, everything else.
Yeah, so the guy who wrote it has said, Philip Eisner has said that he was definitely inspired by Warhammer 40K. He hasn't, like, intentionally written it as a prequel to it. But he accepts that is many people's headcanon, because he certainly did take inspiration for it. He was an avid Warhammer player.
I was going to talk about Tusker demon killer for ages, but I won't.
Do you think Sunshine is connected to Warhammer?
No. No.
It's a solely Event Horizon.
Yeah. The thing about Sunshine that I'd like to talk about...
Yeah.
...is I think the movie would be a masterpiece for one change in writing.
Oh, yeah?
I like Mark Strong. Mark mm-hmm. Strong is a good actor.
Yeah.
Here's my feelings. Yeah. So, as you mentioned earlier, the only dream that Kappa and everybody else on the ship seems to have is about the face of the sun, right?
Yeah.
The scene where he's waking up, there is somebody else in the room with him.
Right.
Who is it?
Cassie.
Yeah. That is a very intimate setting.
Yeah.
I feel, as I mentioned earlier, with like the things being like hyper-focused on, you could quite easily, in the space of that time where they've been traveling, fall in love with someone and develop an intimate relationship yep. with them.
It was removed from the script.
Yes.
They because they decided that it would, like... Why, you know, there's no point in having them, you know, having sex on the spaceship, yeah. basically.
Here's my feelings. Mm-hmm. So, okay, here's the plot line is Mark Strong has been alive on Icarus One.
By himself
for all this time, for like 6.5 years he was alone.
Mm-hmm.
What are you making that face for?
Are you going to say you should have tried to rape Cassie?
No!
Okay, because that sounded like that's where you were going.
No, it's... Okay. No. What the hell are you talking about?
I don't know. It was... I just... That seemed like where you were going.
No, the complete opposite. My version of the script would remove Mark Strong, the Captain Pillbacker, from the entire story.
Okay.
The crew got there. They decided... together as a group that they weren't going to continue. They all commit suicide the way they do by opening the blind and getting basically insta-roasted.
Yeah.
Air fryer sent to 19 million.
Yeah, they Pompeii'd themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, it was just a fault. That's the reason, like, the issues with the ship, and there was issues, and that's why the hatch gets blown, and that's why they get stuck there. The scene where he's talking to the computer and the computer says, you're dying because there's 5
yeah.
crew members on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of being like, where's the 5th crew member? And being like, blah, it's like, oh, the 5th crew member was with Cassie. And then he goes and sees her and she's by herself. And he's like, there's somebody else here. And she's like, oh. And I think that would have changed, like, the whole tone of the... Because the movie goes from, like, hard science fiction, survival science fiction, into sci-fi horror.
Yeah.
At, like, this weird... Even, like, the cinematography's bizarre. Mark Strong is, like, phasing in and out of reality. Yeah, I think it's
so weird that they... Because, like, it must have taken so long to get into that burn makeup. And yeah, then they just never show him in focus on screen.
Yeah, it's so frustrating.
I don't know. I like the misleading of, you know, that they assume that Trey, you know, separated the ships and then killed himself in out of guilt. And then they assume that it's a malfunction, that the computer is saying that Trey is the 5th person.
Yeah.
And then you suddenly go like, oh shit, someone survived in there for, because there was foreshadowing to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
They said it earlier on that, you know, they would have only lasted 3 years if all of them were still alive on there. Cause they only had rations for 3 years for 8 people. But if 4 or more of them had passed away, you know, someone could have survived. And then they don't count the bodies.
Yeah.
They don't go looking for survivors. And they just, when they get there, they just assume they're all dead, even though they've already discussed that someone might be alive.
Yeah.
So I like the sudden turn into, like, you know, especially because you kind of see, to some extent, you start to see them, not to the extent that you do in Event Horizon, obviously, do start to see them kind of, you know, be almost possessed by this idea of the sun, and some of them more so than others are susceptible to it. And then it's just this realization that actually this guy was like super susceptible to it to begin with, presumably based on the log, which was from 6.5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But then also, because in the video log they find, he says, you know, we've decided not to go ahead with it because if our God has decided that this is when we die, then this is when we die.
Yeah, yeah. Which is such a defeatist attitude, because
I don't think it's being defeatist. I think he genuinely believes. I think he's like, because it's not defeat, because he could go and do it.
Yeah,
he's not defeated. He's just made a conscious choice, and also made a conscious choice to prevent other missions from succeeding.
Yeah, I disagree with this logic. Not what you said, but I disagree with this logic, because then wouldn't you be like, well, God gave me the tools to complete this and save everybody, and martyr myself doing it, to like save all of humanity, like your second son, you know, like, isn't that like the mindset of?
That's the mindset of Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
Of Kappa. That's not the mindset of Pinbacker?
Pinbacker, yeah.
It's a different belief. His belief is God has chosen to kill the son, and it's our time to die, and I will stop, you know, us from trying to make decisions like that go against God.
Yeah, there's
I like that it shifts into the horror, but I understand, but I don't think that would have worked, because the baby wouldn't be taking up extra oxygen.
Yeah, I understand.
But... Unless she had like literally given birth in that period, and then you'd be like, what the hell? How did we not know you were pregnant? Yeah. I don't think that would... I can understand where you're coming from, but I don't think so. I thought what you were going to say was that Pinbacker has been on the ship for... That you were like, you know, you're on a ship for 7 years and you're going to, you know, you have needs or you have whatever.
What?
Blah, blah.
No.
And then you're like, and Pinbacker's been on a ship alone for 6.5 years and he comes onto the ship with these women on it.
No,
and you're like,
God.
Oh, God.
No, the thought that annoys me about Pinbacker is he seems to be in, like, great physical condition for somebody who's, like...
Burned to a crisp?
Burned to a crisp to the point where his skin peels off.
Yeah.
Probably hasn't been eating very well.
Toasted like a marshmallow.
Yeah. But he's, like, super strong, apparently. And it's like, I don't
That's
think...
That's just, like, pure adrenaline, probably.
Yeah, but I don't think it would be pure adrenaline at that point, like...
Well, he's probably just been, like, sitting still... No, because if he's sitting still, he would have atrophied.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's been doing. But in his own mind, he is justified by God.
Yeah.
And that will give you some bit of a kick.
Yeah. He went to a dark place, Lisa. Anyway...
Yeah, I thought you were going to a dark place.
You just assumed the worst of me.
Yeah.
So that's sort of my little, like, two little rants. Event Horizon is 40K,
mm-hmm.
and they shouldn't have made it into a weird horror movie at the end, but that's just my feelings on... I still enjoy the movie, Sunshine.
Oh, Sunshine. I thought you were saying Event Horizon. I was like, it was a horror movie from the beginning. Event Horizon is... It was pitched originally, before the full script was written, when Eisner wanted to just, you know, make this film. He pitched it to studios as The Shining in space.
It does have that kind of feeling where the house is evil.
Yeah, you get the haunted house kind of vibe, and also you get, you know, and also, you know, the fact that the haunted house is, like, rather than being haunted by something, it is kind of sentient itself.
Yeah.
And also that you have your character who's going there, but then is, like, turned mad by it, and becomes an avatar of the haunted house. So I see it. I don't think it's quite 100% Shining. I think they took it in weird places. And I think... Yeah, I think it's... I genuinely really enjoy it. I think it's a movie that I will watch many more times.
Have you seen The Core?
Yes, I have seen The Core.
Yeah.
It's a little bit sunshiny.
It's a little sunshiny.
It's a little bit sunshiny. There's quite a few movies about going to the sun.
Yeah, from this list, Solar Crisis, Solar Attack, Stellar Evolution, Sun and Culture, I'm assuming that's just another thing to read.
Is this just movies about going to the sun?
Solar Crisis is. 1996.
What's the list of?
Oh, this is further reading. Solar Attack. It's another weird movie from 2006.
Well, I saw a movie just called Soul. which I think is...
Isn't that that weird movie where the isn't Soul the one where the person turns into a like a ghost?
No.
Wasn't that a not Pixar that movie? Not that kind
of Soul.
Oh, okay.
Soul, S-O-L. What's really annoying is I've tried to search for it and I am getting the other Soul.
Yeah.
Is it? No, there's a different movie called Soul, which is about like an Argentinian performer. Like, that's not what I wanted. There's lots of different movies called Soul, apparently.
Wow. So, yeah, in 1990, there is a movie that is pretty much the exact same premise of Sunshine, called Solar Crisis.
Oh, really? Is this the same?
It's a Japanese-American science fiction thriller film. That's hilarious. Based on a movie called... based on a novel called Crisis 2050.
I'm having a really hard time finding this movie that I'm pretty sure is just called Soul.
Okay.
Because everything I search is just bringing up different things. Like, I was like, Soul movie, and it's giving me, like, Solo, a Star Wars story, and stuff like that, and some other movie called Soul. And then I was like, oh, you know, Soul movie, you know, Into the Sun, and then it's brought up, like, five different movies just called Into the Sun.
Right.
And that's not helpful. But my memory is that Soul, the movie, does end with the guy flying, having to fly himself into the sun, which is kind of the ending of, I was going to say Event Horizon, which is definitely not the ending of Event Horizon. They've gone in the opposite direction. They're on Neptune.
The very ending of Event Horizon always, after I watched it, I think the third time, pisses me off so much, because the acting at the end by the extras is awful. The scene at the very ending when she gets woken up after surviving the entire events and being in the front of the ship as like a lifeboat. She like wakes up and then like the rescue tech takes his mask off and it's Sam Neill again, and she's like screaming, and then it jump cuts and she's like still in the tank and falls like on the ground and blah blah blah, and then the guy just yells the same line over and over again as the movie ends, and then it just drums straight into like electronica drum and bass music at the end of it, and you're like, what?
I think the implication is that like, even though they think they've escaped, they haven't escaped.
Yeah, I get the implication. It's just, why does the extra scream the same line over and over again, but from different camera angles? And like, as the camera pans away, he's like, I need a sedative here! I need a sedative here!
I don't know!
I need a sedative here! And like, nobody else is doing anything, they're just like standing in place.
Yeah.
It annoys me every single time. Do you think he needs
a sedative?
Yeah, probably there.
But no one's helping. Maybe he needs a sedative too. I'm really not finding this movie. It doesn't matter that much. If I find it, I can share it somewhere. But I...
If you find it, you can share it somewhere.
Saw it.
Talking of sharing, hit share on this episode and share it on your social media. It really helps us out.
Do that. Do you want me to go through trivia already? Or do you have more things to talk about?
No, let's get into trivia. Okay,
because there's a lot...
Yeah, I'm aware.
There's like a crazy amount of trivia, and even like narrowing it down to stuff that's interesting to us, there's a crazy amount of trivia for Event Horizon. So the initial cut of Event Horizon was 130 minutes long.
Right.
And they... so they showed it to test audiences. People like vomited and like... people like loads of people felt pretty much everyone felt sick afterwards. It was so violent that like the studio was like, we can't release this. Test audiences were getting sick all over the cinema, so they had to like cut down the 20 minutes and tone down the violence.
Right.
So he said he didn't have enough time to do a proper re-edit, so he thinks he cut out 10 minutes too much of it. Apparently a VHS tape did surface that might contain a full version of the film, but he hasn't had a chance to watch it yet to see if it is, but also said it'll be too poor to use even if it does have the full cut on it, but he's excited to maybe see what's on it. The fireball in the gravity drive tunnel, you know, near the end when Captain Miller is you know, running away from a fireball. That is a practical effect, and it went wrong and set fire to the whole set, and they had to rebuild the set.
Fun.
which is not good.
Not ideal.
Because the machine, like, fell. It was mounted, but it fell over and set fire to the ceiling, and then rolled and set fire to the ground. And he, you know, Paul W.S. Anderson, who directed it, asked the stunt coordinator to switch the machine off, but the controls were on the machine.
Right.
So the whole place had to be evacuated. And there was also, like, gas canisters that were, like, beneath where it fell, but thankfully they did not explode before they got the fire put out. All the visions from hell in the ship's video log were inspired by Renaissance paintings by Hieronymus Bosch and Peter Bruegel. You know, Hieronymus Bosch famously did, you know, the Nine Circles of Hell paintings and things like that. There's a wonderful, someone created an audio clip of, I think it's in the Nine Circles of Hell, or a depiction of hell by Hieronymus Bosch, where there's like a demon etching music onto someone's butt, and someone has actually created an audio of the sound of that, which is just this isn't facts for this movie. I just remembered it, and I think that's wonderful that you can listen to Hieronymus Bosch butt music online. They also so Paul W.S. Anderson was kind of fascinated by these paintings, and you know, the fact that the people who made them clearly really believed in the existence of a hell, and this is what hell looked like, and that was what he wanted to depict. They also were inspired by photos by a guy named Joel Peter Witkin, which featured deformed and dissected people.
Fun.
So that's what a lot of it was based on. I've already talked about the flags, which I think is fun. The one I didn't mention is that Lawrence Fishburne is wearing a Jamaican flag.
Right.
They had a visual effects supervisor. I don't think he was supervisor on this film, but he was giving advice, which is Richard Jurecich, who worked on 2001: A Space Odyssey, Blade Runner, things like that. And he was the one who advised them that they should do practical effects where possible.
Yeah, because the CGI in the movie looks really dated.
Yeah.
Everything is way too shiny and untextured.
Mm.
And it stands out where, like, because it's all just random crap floating
around. Well, the vast majority of stuff in the film is practical effects. Yeah. Like, they have a model of the Event Horizon. You know, they had sets. They had a lot of practical things happening, a lot of makeup and stuff like that as well. They also originally were planning for it to be in 0G and had, like, set up so that everyone would be, like, on wires and, like, floating around, and then it was just like, this is going to be way too difficult to actually make it happen, which is why they had the, like, gravity boots or whatever. The scenes, you may have noticed that there are very few shots of Captain Miller and Dr. Weir together. The reason for that is because Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Neill have incredibly different acting styles.
Right.
And so Lawrence Fishburne essentially would nail the take in the first two or three takes and then just lose energy for the rest of it, whereas Sam Neill needed time to warm up and would get better and better and better with each take. So in order to have the best performance by both actors, they had to be using different shots of them. So there's very few moments where you see them both on screen at the same time, because one of them was getting worse while the other was getting better, which I think is funny. But it was, you know, also great to have that accommodation to be like, hey, these two actors work very differently in terms of, like, when they do their best performances. So how do we get the most out of it? They bumped up the release of it. So it ended up being produced, like, in a much quicker, tighter schedule than expected.
Right.
Because the studio was supposed to release Titanic in July 1997, and it got pushed back to be a Christmas release. So then they needed something
in the meantime.
So they brought forward Event Horizon to be an August release. And Paul W.S. Anderson was like, yeah, absolutely, because he thought, you know, he thought the studio had a lot of confidence in him, and yeah, that's why they did it, because it was going to be the film competing with Air Force One. He was like, wow, they think so highly of me, and, you know, all I've done is, like, Mortal Kombat before this. So, but it also, because he was relatively new to filmmaking, he didn't realize, like, how much of a horror it would be to actually make it then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the film was only greenlit 10 weeks before production had to begin. And then production design had to be really rushed, which meant that lots of big production designers just would not take on the project.
Right.
Because they were like, absolutely not, we can't do it in that time frame. So they ended up with a guy named Joseph Bennett, who was pretty inexperienced, hadn't worked on much, but did a pretty good job of production design. The filming was all done in 86 days, and editing was done in 4 weeks.
Wow.
So Anderson worked 7 days a week while still directing for the final scenes to be able to oversee the editing process. And also, you know, like... just the phrasing of this. It was like, because the post-production schedule was very... you know, short, it was detrimental to the film, but he was still hoping it would be a big summer blockbuster. Obviously, I've already mentioned it was a flop. But so what it says is, eventually they got a rather distressing and disturbing horror film that was difficult to sell. It also meant, the rush production also meant that filming was hard on the crew, and, you know, they all the actors had a bunch of other problems. So Jolie Richardson said that the script was incomprehensible, and that none of the actors really understood the script or anything about the other dimension, but they were all just so happy to be cast against type.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they really pulled actors from who had not done things like this before, you know, or to work with each other as well, that they all signed on. And there was, like, huge special effects work, like big suits, gallons of fake blood. The suits were so heavy that if they couldn't wear them for long periods of time, where they would have permanent back problems.
Jeez.
Yeah, and then, like, long makeup for anyone who had, you know, different things going on. And there was a bunch of accidents on set. So Jolie Richardson and Sam Neill both had been knocked out by a badly timed explosion. Jolie Richardson's foot got jammed in a door, and they kind of felt that the movie was cursed, which is fun for a movie that is about a, you know, kind of a haunted house situation. Paul W.S. Anderson said that the physical sets they built for the actors to interact with were very effective, especially in the Visions from Hell scene. You know, by the end, every actor had come to him and said that they felt like the sets had a disturbing vibe to them.
Yeah.
And his quote for that was, "That's how we knew we were doing something right, when people go, 'I love working with you, Paul, but I hate coming to work.'" And it was actually the sets themselves, because the crew couldn't have been nicer. So the general consensus was that it wasn't a fun project, but all the people were lovely on it.
That's good.
Yeah. Also, apparently, Lawrence Fishburne gave the director, Anderson, a lot of advice and nudged him in the right direction when it came to directing actors to make them give good performances.
Yeah.
Because, like I mentioned, I think this is his third film that he directed, the second one being Mortal Kombat.
Which you saw recently.
Which I saw recently.
Great movie.
Yeah. And I think his career went downhill from here as well.
Yeah.
I do think that this is probably the best film he ever made. But also then Lawrence Fishburne said that he was really happy about the fact that they had real sets, real practical effects, minimal blue screen, that he was able to actually react to the circumstances rather than having to imagine something that was being CGI'd in later. And apparently he frequently scribbled the letters N-A-R on his copy of the script, and Paul Anderson asked him, "What does that mean?" He said, "No acting required."
I just realized, looking at his page, where he went.
Paul W.S. Anderson?
Yeah.
Yeah, what were the... He did some weird stuff after this,
Do you know who his wife is?
No.
If I said to you Resident Evil, would you know who his wife is?
Mila Jovovich?
Yeah.
Oh.
So he did a movie called Shopping, which I've never heard of, Mortal Kombat, Event Horizon, something called Soldier, and then Resident Evil, Alien vs. Predator, Resident Evil, Resident Evil, Death Race, Resident Evil, The Three Musketeers, which I don't know. That's another one with his wife in it, and Luke Evans, Mads Mikkelsen, Orlando Bloom. What the hell is this? That's an
interesting
movie?
Cast.
Luke
Evans and Orlando Bloom feel like they should be brothers, so I hope they're brothers in that movie.
Resident Evil, something called Pompeii, Resident Evil, Monster Hunter, again.
Right.
And then In the Lost Lands, which guess who's got who wrote this, or the short story it's based on? Somebody who should be focusing on their main property, Game of Thrones.
Oh, George
and
George
his
Martin.
Wife again. Are they still married?
I don't know.
They're still married. They've been married since 2009. No wonder she's in every single movie. Anyway.
I want to talk about Jason Isaacs for a minute. Is that his name?
Yeah
Jason Isaacs. So he... We've got a couple of things about him here. So, like, I do think... I feel like Jason... Based on what I've read about Jason Isaacs in this movie, I think he should be in way more horror than he actually is. So he said for his character's death scene, the special effects crews created an extraordinary latex model of him with every broken vein, every hair, mole, eye color and stuff.
Yeah.
And they had the whole naked body hung up by hooks, guttered from the neck to navel with all the organs pulled out. And the original plans were for, you know, his entrails to still be dangling out of a suspended body. And then he was supposed to raise his head to look at Lawrence Fishburne, and then he was going to shoot him in the head to put him out of his misery.
Yeah.
But the shot started with, like, inside the stomach and then pulled out and then back and then, like, panned out to show that it was him on the meat hooks or whatever, you know. And then that was one of the scenes where the audiences were throwing up. so they had to cut that. But also, like... he asked after the movie wrapped if he could take home the dummy that's like just an exact replica of him with like the guts hanging out. And the special effects department were so shocked that they just told him they still needed it, even though they didn't. And when he told his wife about it, she said, "What the fuck did you think you were going to do with it?" I just love that. I love that he was so excited to see this dummy with his guts hanging out that he was like, "Oh, can I take that home after?" It's like, what do you want with that? What are you going to do? Jolie Richardson's character was originally written for a man, but in the auditions they had the part be read by different men and women.
Yeah.
And she was chosen because she was the most convincing delivering the technical dialogue.
Right.
And also that she brought kind of a British stage class to the role. Paul W.S. Anderson said he thought it would be fun to douse her with gallons of blood.
Fair enough.
The scene that they see on the ship's log is known as the blood orgy scene.
Yeah.
And it lasts 20 seconds in the theatrical cut of the film.
Yeah.
But it was originally several minutes long. It's got, you know, shots of a character being stabbed through the head, a man pulling his own intestines out of his mouth, someone holding out his own eyes. And they had to cut, like, this was one of the scenes that made people either get sick or just feel sick. So they cut like a lot of it. And he, you know, Paul W.S. Anderson felt that they might have cut out too much of it if they cut it from, you know, a few minutes down to only 20 seconds. But then he says that like it has stirred, just having like the short snippets of it has stirred audience imaginations more than if they had put in the whole thing.
Because
he says that he often will have people talking to him about it and describe shots that he's sure are not in the movie. Because they're just like, it's so visceral that people are like imagining the rest of it. And then the only other bit of trivia I took down for Event Horizon, because I just thought this was very funny, was that Paul W.S. Anderson and Philip Eisner had originally intended for the crew of the Lewis and Clark to be members of the U.S. Coast Guard. but they had to ask the Coast Guard for permission to use their likeness in the film, and they denied the request, and the reason for denying the request was that they would never be tricked by Satan. Which is wonderful. It was like, no, you can't put us in there because we would never be tricked by Satan.
It's so funny, too, because, like, in the hierarchy of American military, because they all have very distinct personalities. You know, Marines are very much, like, on the ground getting it done. You know, the Navy's got ships, the Air Force has got planes.
Yeah.
The Army's got tanks. Space Force has got space, I guess. And the Coast Guard seem like they have the best time. Because all the other ones are like, yeah, I'm going to get deployed and probably, you know, end up overseas in some horrible country, you know, doing something horrible. You know, Air Force is a little bit different. You may be deployed to an aircraft carrier. But the Coast Guard seem to have a great time.
Yeah.
Because they are literally just, like, protecting the southern border of the states, open water, like, stopping submarines full of drugs and, like, sea rescue and stuff.
Mm.
And they've also got helicopters, but you're like, you're in like the Caribbean, basically.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't think of a better job.
For Sunshine, I've got less trivia, so it won't take as long. One I've already mentioned is where the actors all had to live together in close quarters to create that palpable feeling that they knew each other. Cillian Murphy did get to go home every night because his wife was pregnant at the time.
Nice.
Danny Boyle was so impressed with Michelle Yeoh's audition that he told her she could just choose any part in the script and he'd give it to her. And he said, we can change the gender, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So she chose that she wanted to be a courtesan, the biologist.
Right.
But like, he literally was like, just pick a person, you can have them. You can be literally anyone in the script, we'll turn it into your character. One of the biggest challenges for the VFX team was creating the sun itself. So it's done with CGI, and it ended up being the longest CGI sequencing ever done by any London production house.
Right.
I will mention also, actually, all the VFX, like the actual like CGI VFX in Event Horizon, were also done in the UK, which is interesting. So Alex Garland, who wrote Sunshine, went on to make some other well-known films, such as Ex Machina and Annihilation. And that was when he was doing the promotion for Annihilation, is when he revealed that Harvey was named after Harvey Weinstein, which I thought was very funny. There were actual sounds received from space that were captured by a university that got incorporated into the sound design for Sunshine, which I thought was very cool. This one I put in here because it reminded me of the Jason Isaacs thing that we just read, which is that Corazon's body, after she's passed away in Sunshine, goes out past Kappa, is that his name? Yeah, Kappa in the airlock. And that is also a dummy that they created, a replica of Michelle Yeoh, and the whole crew found it really creepy because it was so realistic. But I don't have any data on whether she wanted to take it home. Probably not.
Yeah.
She seems less insane than Jason Isaacs apparently is. And then the other thing I took down was that Cillian Murphy worked with Brian Cox to learn all about advanced physics before playing this film, including touring CERN in Switzerland, and he learned how to copy different physicists' mannerisms. He ended up copying some of Brian Cox's own like hand movements and things like that. He also claimed that his involvement in this movie, Sunshine, converted him from being agnostic to being an atheist. Which is fun for a movie that's about, you know, the concept of God and meeting your God, to go into it and also learn from physicists and things like that, and, you know, learn the science behind everything and go into it and then be like, actually, this is decided for me. I don't believe in any kind of deity.
Fair enough.
Will I mention the budgets and box office? I guess so, because I did say they were flops. So, Event Horizon, the budget was $60 million, and it made $26
million,
which is a horrible, horrible flop. Sunshine fared a bit better. Their budget was only $33 million, and they made $39 million. So, they at least made back cost.
Yeah.
But, Yeah, not great for either film, which is a shame because genuinely I think these are both really good movies.
Yeah.
But then again, I do enjoy a sci-fi horror.
Yeah, everyone does. There's not many anymore. I think it's definitely a schlocky kind of like first or like low budget movie knee jerk reaction to like, what are we going to make this movie? What genre are we going to make this movie? Oh, let's do like sci-fi horror.
There definitely used to be way more, I feel like.
Yeah, and it's very much like, we had Oat Studio, we had Love, Death, Robots, and Black Mirror, and they're all very much like in that genre.
Yeah, absolutely.
One
of the things that came up in when I was looking up Sunshine on IMDb and the like, you know, similar to this, first thing was Event Horizon, which I thought was very funny. But Pandorum, which is a movie that I loved when I saw it first, and I haven't thought about it in years. And
this is the one where they're, like, stuck in a ship after they arrive on a new planet, right?
It's the guy... And it's very... On it's a planet.
Like, isn't it Dennis Quaid?
Yes.
Yeah.
He, like, wakes up and it seems like... there's no one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's something on the ship with them. It's kind of alien-esque.
Yeah. We should try and find a copy of that because I think I only saw the beginning because whatever copy I had at the time, which probably was bootleg because I was just given a hard drive with a bunch of movies on it to watch.
Didn't work.
No, it was, you know, that weird artifacting that you used to get... on DVD, where the screen, when it was too black, would just make squares.
Oh, yeah, and it is a very dark movie.
It's an incredibly dark movie. Yeah. I couldn't watch any of it, so, yeah.
That's fair. Yeah, that's an interesting film. I don't think it's as good as these films.
No, definitely not.
But I think it would be worth a rewatch. I mean, I do think it's interesting that Alex Garland, who wrote Sunshine, went on to his directorial debut was Ex Machina.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he did Annihilation. And it's like, yeah, these are definitely also sci-fi horrors.
Yeah.
I mean, Ex Machina may be less leaning into the horror, but Annihilation, I mean, the book, the Southern Reach trilogy, and I've just read the fourth book in the series, definitely I would describe as sci-fi horror.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a kind of Lovecraftian way. Less racist than Lovecraft. Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I definitely am a fan of Jeff Vandermeer's works. I think incredible books. But it doesn't surprise me that the person who wrote Sunshine went on to direct the movie adaptation of Annihilation. It's like, yeah, that tracks for me. There's a similar kind of person being possessed by an idea of something that's in nature, but maybe isn't natural. There's a big, debate about, what is and isn't real and what is and isn't meant to be.
Yeah.
The survival of humans versus this greater force that we can't stop. So interesting that there's kind of a similarity in those two.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
If you want to hear more, hit next or back or whatever the next one is. Or it might, you might find this in 10 years' time and be like, oh no, they only lasted another 6 years after this. go to our website, ittakes2.co.nz, and you'll also be able to find a link to our Discord.
Yes.
Where we don't spend enough time, but we would if there were more people interacting.
Absolutely. Also, our next episode is episode 100, which is so strange to say.
Yeah.
That we've been doing this for, this is our 99th episode.
99.
Yeah. And happy birthday to Nick.
Yay, me.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.